Okay. In the words of Robert Frost, we have miles to go and promises to keep. With that, I will turn it over to Dave Preble for the Habitat Committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was just pointed out to me by Dave Gaethel that in 3 days, nobody's given a report and emerged unscathed. And what I'm hoping is that everybody's softened up enough so that we can move quickly. This is the report on the Habitat Committee, specifically on progress that's been made with Omnibus Amendment 2 for EFH and the coral work that's been done. And I need to give just a little bit of background because of how it's evolved over the last month or two. We've had several meetings of the PDT and the committee, and the meeting outcomes include we now have a range of alternatives for deep-sea coral protection zones and associated management actions, and we have a range of adverse effects minimization areas for the EFH portion of the amendment. The council actions that will be required today are to approve the deep-sea coral alternatives for analysis, including the designation of coral zones and management actions within those zones. The information you have available is the meeting summaries from February 23rd and April 26th committee meetings and from the March 7th PDT meeting. We also have a short handout from the Enforcement Committee dealing with actions relating to corals. And we have some deep-sea coral background information document, a decision document, and Michelle has a presentation on the deep-sea coral alternatives. Then we have a series of committee and non-committee motions that we will go through. And in order to give you a sense of where we are with this, because it's been so convoluted over the last 7 years or so, Omnibus Amendment 2 was begun, lo these many years ago, for updating EFH and determining effects mitigation under the terms that were laid out by the 1996 Sustainable Fisheries Act, which was an update of Magnuson. It was actually a huge and complex task that needed new analytical tools and was understood at the time to be a precursor to ecosystem-based fishery management. 3 or 4 years later, it was determined that corals needed to be protected, and as a matter of convenience, corals were added at that time to Omnibus Amendment 2 for convenience, since they are benthic organisms that we had never managed, and as a way to move forward with no real guidance at the time. The only way that was available at that time was to key the management actions that we would take to the EFH amendment, since we could only take these actions within EFH for species who are already managed by the council. That left us with poor coverage for corals and inappropriate in many areas, and it was, in fact, as was pointed out abundantly at the time, it was a basically fundamentally dishonest way of proceeding. So the next step was that the Magnuson Act reauthorization established a special authority to manage corals that was not linked to EFH, which meant that we could now assume appropriate coverage. At that time, it was decided to keep it with Omnibus Amendment 2, first of all, for convenience, because that amendment was proceeding, and secondly, because they are benthic creatures that are part of the benthic environment. And it was determined at that time for the committee and the PDT to develop both the EFH and the coral initiatives on parallel courses. And that's exactly what happened. Over the next couple of 3 years, we worked parallel with both initiatives. And then there was determined then along the way about a year and a half, 2 years ago, that we would have to have groundfish input so that we could have consilience in the management actions that were taken with habitat and groundfish, since they were concurrent from a long time before, and still kept corals together. All of this worked very well. The denouement came at the end of last year, 2011, when we established a final timeline to complete both coral and EFH together. That was planned for submission to the Council in September of 2012, which would have been a complete omnibus amendment with groundfish and corals included. And then, of course, what happened, as everybody knows, is that what we've been dealing with the last couple of days, we had a tsunami that occurred a series of tsunamis and aftershocks that we're still dealing with, that threw the schedule off quite a lot. So then it was determined that the closed area analysis was not just for habitat, it was also essential to part of the solutions that were required for the groundfish tsunami. So it's been determined to keep that at the top of the list of priorities. But it did throw off our scheduling. And at this point, it appears that now what we have is we have a completed coral action, and we have an EFH action, which will not be completed until late this year now. So what we're doing here now today is we're going to deal with this situation with the corals and try to put that to bed, and then move on in the ensuing days, the coming days, with the regular EFH portion. As we move forward with the corals, a couple of things emerged. First of all, that we're really dealing with two completely different sets of circumstances, one being the corals in areas that we're familiar with, what we call a discrete area analysis. And these are areas primarily in the canyons of known coral abundance and of areas where we know that corals can exist, and the seamounts. The general strategy for that group of corals, what we call a discrete area strategy, is the protection of the known coral concentrations. The other thing that needed to be dealt with is the outside deeper water areas, what we call the broad scale initiative, and that goes from some point on the continental slope to the outer boundary of the EEZ. And this area, we have little or no data and little hope of getting a lot of data by simply saying, okay, we're going to go out and do research on the area, because that isn't going to happen. And there's no real fishing going on out there now anyway, with the exception of the red crab. So what we have on that outside water is a real mer inconnu. We have an unknown sea with no data. Now, we can take action to protect corals that we don't know whether they're there or not, or we can try to get the data. And what we've done is we've designed management initiatives to try to do that. So that's where we stand right now, and I'm going to turn it over to Michelle, and then when she's done explaining all of this from the technical standpoint, then we'll move forward with the management initiatives. Go ahead, Michelle.
Thank you very much. So what I'm going to try and do with this presentation is just add a little bit to some of the context that Dave just provided, and then just describe the measures and give some background on the analysis that's already been done, and also some of the kind of rationale behind the different alternatives. So Dave already went through this. I think the key document here is probably document 3, which runs through the range of alternatives. And then as we get into the motions, some of the motions come from the February 23rd committee meeting, and then some come from the April 6th committee meeting. So when we're talking about deep-sea corals, these are basically animals that live at 50 meters or deeper, up to thousands of meters. They're found in locations all over the world. There's quite a variety of different species that have different requirements in terms of substrate affinity. They're different shapes and sizes. Some are solitary animals, some are colonial animals. Some even build reefs, kind of analogous to tropical coral reefs. We don't actually have any of those reef-building types in our region. When the PDT was kind of approaching how to go about designing these alternatives, we, you know, discussed which of these coral species were of primary interest from a conservation perspective, and we kind of came to two conclusions. The first was that corals that are larger, structurally more complex, more likely to entangle potentially with fishing gear. We thought that those were kind of one category of priority. And then a second way to prioritize corals to be included as a focus of developing these alternatives was corals that require a hard substrate for attachment. There's a lot of sandy, muddy areas on the slope and abyssal plain out to the EEZ, but as far as we know, the hard substrates are more limited. I guess the only other thing to point out about the corals in general is that we're, you know, somewhat operating in a data-poor environment with corals. There haven't really been scientific efforts that focus specifically on these species in particular. Corals have certainly been a large component of some field efforts, and there's some, you know, work that's recent and coming online in the next few years that is coral focused. But we don't have complete, by any means, coverage of surveys for corals throughout the region. So there's a number of areas where the alternatives that are proposed are actually based on an inference that suitable habitats occur and not on documented presence of these organisms, because we just simply don't have the data. Also, in a lot of cases, the data that we do have are telling us that corals were present. It's not telling us anything about relative abundance of the different types or that kind of thing. So all the information that we have is basically outlined in document 2 by, in some cases, by coral type, and then in some cases on an area-by-area basis. So there's a lot of information there about what we do know, but there's a lot of things that we don't know. So just to kind of link this back to, for those of you who've been on the council since, I guess, 2006, 2007, you may have remembered some coral discussions from that point. As part of phase one of the amendment, once the EFH designations were more or less established, there was a process to solicit nominations for habitat area of particular concern designations, and those are by definition a subset of essential fish habitat. And a number of the proposals that were put forward were actually related to corals and related organisms and coral habitats and canyons and on seamounts and on the continental slope. So there's a number of different HAPC proposals that were approved by the council, 11 in the canyons and one that covers two of the seamounts. So these haven't been implemented yet until the full amendment is done, but they're out there. The proposals that I'll be showing you and that we'll be discussing today are in a lot of ways similar and cover a lot of the same areas as these HAPCs, but they are slightly different, and the process of developing them and kind of the criteria we used were slightly different. So I don't know that we need to go into at all exactly what the HAPC proposed HAPCs look like and where they are, but there are kind of some commonalities. As Dave mentioned, in 2007 when the Magnuson Act was reauthorized, there was some discretionary provisions put into the Act that allow councils to take action for deep-sea corals without requiring that nexus to essential fish habitat designations. And there's some details about what went into the Act in the introduction to the decision document, Document 3. And then there's also some information about guidance that we received in the spring of 2010 from the regional office about how to go about implementing those provisions. So there's a lot more, I think Dave mentioned this, but in terms of the essential fish habitat designations that are proposed and where we know or think we would expect corals to occur, there's not a really great overlap, particularly in really deep waters. So, you know, we know that corals occur in deeper parts of the canyons than 1,500 meters, but that's the deepest we have EFH. Similarly on the seamounts, 2,000 meters really just gets to the top of the seamount. The abyssal plain is somewhere around 4,000 meters there. So there's large portions of the seamount that aren't included if you cut it off at 2,000 meters. So the discretionary provisions really offer more flexibility and an ability to define areas based on, you know, where we know or expect corals to occur, rather than being constrained about where EFH is designated. Just because we aren't required to document these links so explicitly, it's not to say that these corals don't provide habitat, structural habitat for species. We know, for example, in the Gulf of Maine and the Jordan Basin area that there's lots of redfish associated with some of the corals that are there. So there's definitely links. In a lot of cases, the, you know, precise links and how that relates to production isn't really at all established, but there is a connection to fish, for sure. So part of the guidance that we got from the regional office, and this is kind of a no-brainer if you think about where the different fisheries managed by the New England and Mid-Atlantic Councils kind of occur and overlap, is that we need to consult with them as we're developing these kind of measures, if any of the measures are going to impact fisheries managed by the Mid-Atlantic Council. So, you know, kind of knowing that and knowing that there's Mid-Atlantic managed fisheries in canyons that are further north, for example, tilefish, and there's New England managed fisheries in areas that are further south, such as red crab. We've been consulting with the Mid-Atlantic for a couple of years now, deliberately and really focused on this issue in particular, although it's had other benefits for sure. So we have a new Mid-Atlantic staffer who's transitioning onto our PDT. Tom Hoff retired, and Jessica Coakley is going to be taking his place, and she actually attended our last meeting. And on the committee, we currently have Peter Defer, and formerly, when he was on the council, Eugene Cray was our committee member. The other thing that we've done specifically with regards to corals is reach out to members of the coral research community that are outside the PDT. And we had in particular, we had a meeting in Woods Hole in October of last year, and just trying to make sure that we were capturing all the different sources of information and, you know, looking comprehensively at all the potential areas. And it was really useful to have all the experts in the room. And so I feel like, you know, this is what we've put together is a pretty comprehensive look of what's available right now in terms of the science on corals. I gave basically the same presentation at the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting in DUC on April 10th, and they had some questions and comments during the actual presentation day, and then 2 days later when the council took action, they made two motions in regards to corals, and there was a press release last week on this issue, which some of you may have seen. Basically, first, they're seeking development of an MOU between the three Atlantic councils on the issue of how to approach coral management in broad areas that would be kind of contiguous between council regions. And the second motion was that the Mid-Atlantic Council plans to initiate a coral-related management action of their own. So we discussed at our last Habitat Committee meeting and then also somewhat at the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting, you know, what that boundary would be if we were to go the route of having, you know, essentially two coral management plans for the New England region and the Mid-Atlantic region. And so that's just that line that cuts across, and it basically starts at the intersection of Rhode Island and Connecticut, and then goes offshore at an angle until it hits the EEZ. It basically cuts in the middle of Alvin Canyon. So Dave mentioned this as well, but there's essentially the management alternatives in the decision document are divided into kind of two categories. There's this broad coral zone area approach, and then this discrete area approach. And they have a lot of similarities and a couple of, you know, major differences. With the broad areas, I think this is, I can characterize where the committee is going as, the idea is to figure out, you know, where fishing is occurring and designate a coral protection zone that's pretty much outside of the footprint of fishing. And so management would be essentially a, you know, precautionary approach to protect the corals that we know and that we don't know occur in a wide area while largely preserving existing fishing opportunities. And the restrictions that would be associated with that would be either prohibiting mobile bottom tending gear or prohibiting all types of bottom tending gear, but then there would be a experimental fishery or protocol developed so that continued exploration and fishing could occur there, you know, with kind of safeguards for corals and with provisions to allow for the collection of additional data. The discrete area approach focuses on smaller areas, so single canyons, slope regions where we know that there's suitable habitat for corals. There's a couple of different areas in the Gulf of Maine that the PDT has identified and recommended to the committee as well, and then the four seamounts, New England seamounts, that are within the EEZ. And so these areas either, we know that there are corals there. There have been one or more surveys that give us very good evidence that the species that are of interest to us occur, or we can infer that the right habitats are there based on an evaluation of the slope in the area and the bathymetry. And so the design for these are kind of straight line boundaries based largely on the bathymetry and the slope and where we know the corals are. And the range of fishing restrictions in these areas, at least, you know, the range of options is the same. Whether ultimately the committee and the council would recommend the same types of restrictions for both areas if both areas were implemented simultaneously, you know, that there hasn't been any clear recommendations at the committee level at this point. But, you know, some combination of one or the other or both of these frameworks, you know, may emerge. So the broad zones are quite large. The areas that are on here are actually a little bit inaccurate because I learned a bit of geography recently and I redrew my mid-Atlantic, South Atlantic boundary. But in any case, they're pretty close. And so essentially what you have is three different options for these broad coral zones, and they start at a depth of either 300 meters, 400 meters, or 500 meters and extend all the way to the EEZ. And so they really encompass the, you know, vast majority of the canyons. The heads of these canyons are a bit shallower than that, but most of the canyons fall within this zone, all of the seamounts, and then, you know, a number of other slope areas and very deep water areas as well. And again, the objective is to figure out, you know, where fishing is occurring and then and put these broad zones largely outside of that current footprint. So just to show you a bit closer, just to give you a sense for that, you know, these boundaries are pretty complex because the shape of the shelf slope break is complex because there's all these canyons that occur. The kind of difference in terms of, you know, distance between the actual different boundaries kind of varies depending on where you are along the slope. The area of the slope that, it's a pointer. Yeah, so where the slope kind of curves here, or where the slope shelf break curves, it's much shallower, and there's a greater distinction between the two zones, whereas the Georges Bank and then the Mid-Atlantic Canyons, it's a bit steeper. So the zones are actually less different kind of in those areas. So that's the range of area boundary options for the broad areas. The discrete areas, you know, I mentioned we tried to be as systematic as possible as going when determining which areas to consider and how to evaluate them. And so we ended up looking at a total of 48 named canyons, five different slope regions, four different seamounts, and two locations in the Gulf of Maine. And out of those, the PDT recommended and the committee accepted the recommendations for 22 different canyons. Six of those were based on known presence of corals, and I'll explain that in a little bit. And then 16 were based on inferred coral habitats being present. There was one slope area that was recommended. All four seamounts were recommended, and then the two Gulf of Maine areas. And so when I say that an area is recommended based on presence of corals, it wasn't just, you know, the presence of any, you know, small number of coral records. It the PDT went through and evaluated whether we felt that the evidence for the presence of corals was kind of high, moderate, or low. And in cases where we felt that the presence had been highly well assessed or moderately well assessed, we felt that we could use that as a basis for a recommendation if, in fact, there were lots of corals in that area. And so there, again, were six areas that we recommended on that basis. In areas where coral presence just hasn't really been assessed at all, or there's been very limited survey effort for corals, we looked at the geological data where it was available. In many cases, we don't have good geological data, so we looked at the bathymetry and also the slope, and we made an inference about whether suitable habitats were likely to occur. In cases where we didn't recommend coral zones, it was where people looked for corals, but they just really haven't been found, or where we didn't feel that the analysis we did of the bathymetric and slope data supported a recommendation that suitable habitats were there. So we originally were taking kind of a more qualitative discussion-based approach about, you know, whether an area is suitable habitat for corals based on kind of expert opinion. And one of our clever PDT members said, well, why don't we just be quantitative and systematic about it? And that's, you know, going to be more defensible and rigorous and, you know, actually probably easier to do than going back and forth. So we did, and we basically took a bathymetry data set and converted that into a slope data set and looked at where the canyons are steep and where they have a really high relief. And the thinking is that when a canyon has a high relief, and I'll show you on the next slide kind of what we mean by relief, that the underlying rocks that are under the soft sediments that kind of veneer the canyons are more likely to be exposed. And if those rocks are exposed, you know, you're getting suitable attachment sites for these deep sea corals of conservation interest. And so you're making the inference that habitat's appropriate and that there probably would be corals there if you had the survey effort to go and look. We originally talked about using a depth based threshold to define the slope, and we ended up going with a slope-based threshold because it was just more consistent across the whole region. And we used a relief value of 450 meters to classify a canyon as high relief, likely to have outcropping rocks, versus moderate low relief, not as likely to have outcropping rocks. So I think the figure on the right is probably maybe more interesting. It's basically this the arrow in the middle shows you the relief value, and so if you're kind of looking, this is looking either up or, I guess, down the canyon. And so this is the seafloor here, and then these are the two rims, and the relief is just that measure of height from the seafloor to the rims. So it's not a depth measurement because in most cases where we took the cross-section to do this analysis, the rims are at about 200 meters or, you know, give or take. So essentially, if we have a canyon with a relief of 500 meters, that means the water depth there is roughly 700 meters. And the results of this analysis and a number of other measurements are all in that document to the background information about each area, if anyone's interested. So what came out of that was a number of recommendations about different canyon areas to be considered as deep sea coral protection zones. This slide actually shows all of the different discrete areas that were recommended. And I can actually just, it's probably easier to go through them on the subsequent slides because it's a little bit zoomed in better. And you can probably read this better on your handouts anyway. But so on the left are the canyon and slope areas that are recommended on the basis of coral data. So there's some canyons and then this unique slope region down south of Hudson Canyon, which, you know, has these outcropping rocks that you don't see in other slope regions and has a number of corals documented there. On the right is the range of different canyon habitats where they had that relief 450 meters or greater, and so the PDT recommended those to the committee as potential coral zones on the basis of habitat suitability. The way the actual boundaries were drawn, the landward boundary is based on where that 3-degree slope contour I measured occurs. as the kind of the starting point of where the slope gets really steep and the canyon kind of begins. And generally, as I said, that's around 200 meters, although it varies a little from canyon to canyon. The kind of the sides of the polygons and then the depth going off, the boundary going offshore towards the EEZ is really based on encompassing areas of high slope. And so the PDT looked at slope maps and basically binned slope into kind of five different categories, and that highest category of steep slope are the areas that we tried to bound with these coral zones. That's shown better on some subsequent slides. So here you can see just the kind of color coding. Basically, the redder areas are the steeper slopes, and really the only places that you get these kind of slopes in the region are in these canyons, and maybe on the sides of the seamounts to some extent. So the 3-degree is the kind of dotted line. It's a little hard to see, I think, from the back on the slide. And then the darker red is basically the extent of the canyon that we wanted to bound for these coral zones. If you look at a like large-scale bathymetry map of the entire region, some of these canyons actually go way out, very far, you know, onto the abyssal plain, and you can detect them for a long time. But we didn't think that that actually made sense in terms of trying to focus on where we thought the most appropriate coral habitat would occur. So again, these are just based on where the steepness is occurring. You can see on here that basically there's a lot of similarity between the area that's covered by in a given canyon between the discrete zones and then the different broad zones, except the discrete zones do go a little bit shallower in at the landward boundary. Next, we discussed seamount coral zones, and for those, we basically the committee asked the PDT to design some boundaries that are based on the bathymetry of seamounts. And so with a high-resolution bathymetry data set, it's pretty straightforward to figure out where the seamounts stop and where the abyssal plain starts. And so there's depth and size information about each of these areas in the document, and also coordinates for all the edges of the boundaries. There's basically four seamounts that occur within the EEZ, and then the seamount chain actually extends further to the east. And then finally, there's two different sets of areas in the Gulf of Maine that the PDT recommended as coral zones, and the committee recommended to be analyzed. The first is on the left is just near Mount Desert Rock. If you can see the circle on the figure, it basically Mount Desert Rock itself is kind of right in the middle here, and so this is all state waters. And then the proposed coral area is just the west, kind of southwest of that. And then the right-hand panel, sorry, it's a bit dark. Looks kind of nicer on my screen. There's four different areas in western Jordan Basin that basically are on top of bumps, I guess. They've been kind of informally called outcropping rocks and hard substrate that are kind of within the more general muddy habitats of western Jordan Basin. And so three of the four of those have had ROV work, and corals and the different organisms that are associated with them have been documented. And then the fourth, the uppermost, northernmost zone, just looking at the bathymetry, the PDT recommended would be likely similar, but it hasn't been surveyed visually. And then so finally, the committee recommended a range of different fishing restriction options that would actually go with both types of zones. And obviously different options could be picked for different zones if multiple zones were implemented. So the first thing to consider is what should the fishing restrictions be, and there is basically two options: to restrict all bottom tending gears or to restrict just mobile bottom tending gears. And we discussed as under the category of all bottom tending gears that the deep sea red crab fishery in particular operates pretty much entirely within these coral zones. So it was probably worth to consider exempting them entirely from these restrictions. And so that's a kind of sub-option that's been already identified as something the committee would recommend the council analyze. In terms of exemptions to these fishing prohibitions, this section still needs further development, but the intention is to allow for continued exploratory fishing and, you know, to not completely cut off all fishing opportunities in these areas, but to have it proceed in a way that is data is being gathered about when and where fishing is occurring and about any interactions with corals. And there are programs kind of like this that have been developed in other deep water areas that we can maybe use as a kind of basis for developing this. And, you know, we currently obviously have experimental fishery permits that are given for different reasons already. So the list here is basically just some requirements that have been used in issuing experimental fishery permits in the past. But this kind of the specifics of what this program would look like still need to be developed by the PDT and the committee. And finally, the committee wanted to include framework provisions to allow not the zones to be themselves to be changed via framework, but to allow changes to the fishing restrictions and adjustments to the exemption program that's developed via framework. This is, I think, my last slide. The Enforcement Committee met on the 22nd of March and gave them a kind of similar presentation to this, just reviewing the range of alternatives. And the committee and the plan development team really wanted to know what the early enforcement concerns might be. And so the comments were that, you know, these are large areas and they're very far offshore. So they're somewhat would be challenging from an enforcement perspective, but not unenforceably so. They recommended that because the discrete zones are smaller and more focused, it would be easier from a monitoring perspective. They liked that the discrete area boundaries were coordinate-based, as opposed to being like a depth contour-based boundary, like the broad zones. And then finally, in terms of implementing fishing restrictions, they agreed with the way that they had been structured, that they would either be for mobile gears or fixed gears rather than splitting out different types of trawls and being that specific, because from the air it's, you know, difficult to determine between different types of fishing gear that people could be using. So I think that's all I have. I'm happy to take any questions or if you want to just kind of start going through the motions.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I just wanted to make a couple of comments just to put this in perspective. The two types of zones, the discrete zone and the broad zone, have fundamentally different objectives. The discrete zone, the management and enforcement goals would be the protection of known corals. And because of that, and taking the Coast Guard's input in mind, those would be coordinate-based. The boundaries would be coordinate-based. The broad zones, on the other hand, are based upon the way that that NAFO handles the deep water fisheries in the NAFO regulatory area. And these are areas where we don't really know what's there. And to just say, well, you can't fish or to put restrictions on industry would not be appropriate. So we took their lead on this and decided that what we wanted was to turn these into exploratory fishing areas. And the reason to do that is to get the data. In other words, have industry, if somebody wants to begin a fishery or explore a fishery out there, try a fishery, to allow them to do that. And under the conditions that they do this with either a permit or an LOA, and that they we get the data from it as to what's found there. And there's a list of potential regulatory actions that could be taken. But the management and enforcement goal would be fundamentally different than in the inside discrete areas. This would be the promotion of exploratory fishing for opportunity and for data. And because of that, it's depth-based, which the Coast Guard would not really like if the idea was to have restrictions on fishing. But they were okay with us having the depth-based delineation of the area under the circumstances that we had in mind. So that's what I wanted to add. Also, the Mid-Atlantic Council has already moved on this, and more about that afterwards. But that's where we are right now.
Do you have any motions to put up?
Yes,
the
okay. I didn't know what you want, might want questions for.
My assumption was that
go with the motions.
The motions would lead to the
good
question.
Okay. Okay. What we're going to start with is the the intent here is to break corals away from the EFH portion and get it moved so that we can put that part of it to bed. The Mid-Atlantic Council decided that they wanted to take care of the discrete zones within their regulated area. And we also, between us, decided that that would not be appropriate in the distant water areas where the only barrier is a political line and that represents not at all any difference in the ecosystems. So they want to work with us, and we want to work with them on the broad area, the broad-scale area. So I have two motions that are identical to the motions that were passed 2 weeks ago by the Mid-Atlantic Council. The first one is to, and this is not a committee motion, by the way. This is what we now find that we need to do. Initiate a plan amendment to protect deep sea corals within the New England Council management boundary with Alvin Canyon included within the New England zone. That last portion is because the boundary goes right through the middle of Alvin Canyon. But Alvin Canyon is a part of the Atlantis Canyon complex geologically, and it makes no sense to split that one little section of Atlantis off for the Mid-Atlantic. So we would retain management of Alvin Canyon as part of the New England zone. That's the first motion.
Before I ask for a second, I just had a couple of questions. My understanding is that this was not discussed at the last Habitat Committee meeting?
No, the Mid-Atlantic Council acted upon this after our last committee meeting. So this has not been before the committee. That's why it's not a committee motion. And the reason for wording it this way was simply because this puts us exactly in line with the Mid-Atlantic's motion. But I'm open to suggestions here.
Yeah, and I'm my questions aren't directed at whether this is a good idea or not a good idea. My concern is more of a process. We do have a committee that works on this. The committee itself hasn't had a chance to comment on it. The committee may see things and issues that, because they're familiar with it, that we don't hear. And that was just my concern. And on top of that, I just wondering that when we get to the alternatives, if we approve those for further analysis, I don't think waiting one meeting to have the committee look at this would slow down the analysis of the alternatives that we would put forth. But those are just some comments. I need a second, and then we'll discuss it. Seconded by Dave Gaethel. Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think it makes any sense at all to do a separate plan amendment, regardless of whether the MID does one. We want to look at what areas are going to be close to fishing holistically, and that was the whole idea of doing an omnibus habitat amendment. We don't want to close areas for groundfish, close them for scallops, close them for monkfish habitat. We want to look at it holistically. I have no problem with saying that this part of the canyon south, it primarily deals with mid-Atlantic fisheries, so they can protect coral in this area. But I think we've come so far. I think we can have an option that has a boundary that they manage coral beyond this area, but I don't see why we have to do a separate plan amendment. Let's just keep going the way we are. If we break it off, then it is more work because we're going to have to do upfront cumulative impacts, regulatory, another review and actions to publish by NIMS. I don't see any benefit to doing a separate action.
I was just going to comment that we did have a pretty extensive discussion about, splitting the area. I don't think we've picked a specific place, but there was an extensive committee discussion, went on for a couple hours. I can find it in the record here in a minute. So I just wanted to, address that issue.
Then, I was at one of the meetings where there was a discussion about splitting between Mid and New England versus, I'm reading this, splitting off and having a separate amendment that would go on its own track parallel to whatever remains in the omnibus as a separate thing. Am I reading that incorrectly?
I'll let Dave speak to that. The way I read it was different.
Yeah, the whole idea, the wording of this amendment, and as I said, I'm open to anybody's suggestions here because we're a little outside of the reservation. But the idea here was simply to go along with the initiative of the MID to work together as much as we can. They've worked together with us very well on this up to this point. And when we were aware of the fact that we had a further delay until the end of the year, that was when they had decided that they wanted to split off the canyons south of Alvin, just the canyons, to manage under a separate plan amendment of theirs. That was the only reason that this was done in this way. If there's a better way to do it, I am really open to any suggestion there. I'm not wedded to this at all. If it's better to keep this in the amendment and then have it proceed later along with the full amendment, whatever works legally and from a process standpoint. But at this point, this is the first cut right here. And Michelle said that she would be able to put together an amendment by the early autumn to do just this. But that's up to you guys how you want to handle the process. But in reply to what Dave said, at the last meeting, Rip, which you were not at, we had an extensive discussion of this with the Mid-Atlantic people, extensive. So the committee has been completely vetted on this.
Okay, let me just rephrase my question, because my question wasn't splitting between the Mid and New England. My question is on the idea of a separate amendment just for deep-sea corals. That's the only thing that I was commenting on, that it was my understanding that the committee had not discussed that aspect of it versus the Mid versus New England. And my only concern was, we do have a process, and maybe it's better to go through that, even though I don't think if we delayed just that part of it one meeting, it would delay the thing. You could still do the analysis and stuff on that. I'll stop talking.
Yeah, I just want to be clear on what you're suggesting. We can continue with the other motions, which we really need to get through the council, and then continue with the analysis, and then retain this within the current amendment. If that's fine, I'm fine with that. If that works.
No, I was just suggesting that the committee itself look at the concept of a separate amendment and what the issues may or may not be with that. Bring it back to the council at the June meeting after people have had a chance to really think about it. That's all I was saying. Erling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not the desire of the Mid-Atlantic Council to go out on their own. We want to work with this council to develop these zones, but it is the desire of the Mid-Atlantic Council to have final say in what is done or how we deal with the canyons in our geographic area.
Doug.
As someone who's on the Habitat Committee, I would certainly be in favor of Paul's suggestion that we just have at some point, either this meeting or the next meeting, we just make a motion to include an option to lop off the Mid-Atlantic portion of the discrete areas, and we'd take as I said, Alvin Canyon here, and just keep it moving forward in the current amendment we have. I think that's the simplest thing. We've already moved in this direction. Originally, we were talking about doing it all together, but my question is, do you want us to do it now, or do you feel strongly enough that we need to go back and have a discussion about this between now and the June meeting, or could we make that motion right now to add an option to have the Mid-Atlantic take everything south of Alvin County Canyon?
Well, my sense is that discussion has gone through the committee.
I'll let Dave.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you. There is a second motion on the Memorandum of Understanding, initiating a Memorandum of Understanding with the Mid and the South on the broad scale initiatives. The only problem we had here, the reason for this first motion was to allow the Mid to break off their section and initiate their own amendment. But however it works is fine with me.
Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unless I'm missing something, why would we need a memorandum of understanding for anything? There's no real standards for how much coral you have to protect. It's up to the council in terms of to the extent practicable. And it seems reasonable to me that we draw our boundary, and north of this boundary we handle in conjunction with our habitat closures and all our other closures. And where the Mid-Atlantic fisheries are most impacted, they handle coral whichever way they want south of this line. That seems pretty reasonable to me. The coral aren't going to move north, to my knowledge. So I think that this seems very simple, and we're trying to make a very simple thing complicated.
And I know Dave will probably want to comment further on it. I think the issue, and it
yep.
was brought up very clearly by industry members, is that people fish north and south of whatever this imaginary line is that we put in the water, and they're asking for some continuity of regulation so that when they cross that line, they don't have to deal with an entirely new set of regulations. So that was why we wanted to coordinate the two. Dave?
Yeah, that's precisely right, Rip. The problem is, as industry sees it, is that if they go out and begin an exploratory fishery that has, let's say, a move-along rule, they don't want to get caught in varying regulations in the distant waters off the continental shelf between two councils based upon a political boundary that has nothing to do with the actual structure of the ecosystem. So that was the reason for that. Industry wanted to make sure that there was a continuity of regulation and in the outside, the broad areas. Outside of probably in the range of 400 meters, 500 meters, all the way to the edge of the EEZ. And it was simply because of the situation of having a political boundary go right through the middle of a large marine ecosystem and also the fact that we couldn't even identify the boundary anyway.
Dave Gaethel.
I think it's clear to me, based on what I'm hearing here, there's two things. One is, the Mid wants to manage their own section of the world. And the second is that I think this would be a cleaner language-wise to say to continue a plan amendment to protect deep-sea corals within the New England Council. It's the second part of the motion is what you really want to get at here, is this splitting of the ocean at Alvin Canyon. And then the Mid does what it does with its part, and we do what we do with our part. And so, if the maker is happy, I would just change the word initiate to continue a plan amendment.
That's, everyone agrees. Erling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul is absolutely right. What, you know, how this, we feel this should be done. We're not going to reinvent the wheel. We want to work with the New England Council on this. You're apparently ahead of us. There's been some changes. You just heard Tom Hoff retired as of yesterday. Jessica Copley is now going to be the person that's going to do the corals. Peter DeFur, who's the liaison, you're familiar with him, the ones around the Habitat Committee. He is not on the list of nominees for the seat that he currently holds, so I don't know who's going to be doing that. So there may be some changes there. But we would like to work with the New England Council on this issue. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience, Gibb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. We support the original motion on this. The deep-sea coral element of the omnibus habitat has been tied to the EFH component since the beginning, back with the request for proposals, I think it was 2004. And the corals have been tied to essentially the anchor of the EFH process that's dragged on for 8 years now. The corals, what we're hearing right now, is the work has been done on the corals, that they can move by themselves. They have their own authority. They don't by any means need to be attached to the omnibus amendment. It's a much different authority coming out of Magnuson. And also the thing that wasn't discussed here is that the EFH amendment is bogged down right now with the consideration of the groundfish mortality closures. And we don't have much progress right now. There's an opportunity, there's a window in the workload of the Habitat PDT to move a standalone deep-sea coral action. Get this done, take care of it. The New England Council can lead the nation as the first one to use the discretionary authority. There's an opportunity over the next few months to do this, get out in front of it, and have an example of using this new authority. Otherwise, it's going to be attached to this omnibus process, which has been going on for, we're moving on close to a decade here, and we're going to miss an opportunity. The Habitat PDT is, as I said, waiting for the groundfish analysis to come through. So I think moving on and whatever mechanism it takes to initiate a new process, a standalone action, Michelle has advised that the New England Council can do this, can peel it off and make a separate amendment, and that the workload is not too much to overcome. So I think that the council should take this opportunity and lead the way on deep-sea corals, and delaying this just is a bad way to go, and we're going to be here 3 years from now. Thanks.
Anyone else? Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Calamo from Senator Scott Brown's office. Concerned about our habitat and corals and our environment, so on and so forth. Mr. Chairman, I probably need some education in this. And is it all right? I can talk to this young lady from here through you. I want to ask her a question. I seen with my own eyes in being a fisherman third generation and coming out of the oldest fishing port in our country, Gloucester, Massachusetts, that I've seen with my own eyes are dead zones in the Chesapeake Bay. And I believe overfishing didn't do that, or fishing industry didn't do that, because it was proven that the runoffs from the golf courses and runoff from the lawns and the PCBs and the other pesticides have reached the Chesapeake Bay region in the, I call it the northeast zone or whatever you want to call it, and it's a dead area. And to my delight, I watched TV and there was, PBS, one of the stations showing us the dead zones and the same thing that I believed on when I was at the Mid-Atlantic Council and listened to this a while back. So that had nothing to do with fishing. And yet there were people from the Virginia area when I was on the Atlantic States were blaming it on the Menhaden fishing vessels that they were destroying the habitat, destroying the Chesapeake Bay. And I guess they were proven wrong because all the science led without any problem saying the conclusion was the runoffs killing the dead zone and killing the clams and all the vegetation in the Chesapeake Bay.
Vito, can I ask you to direct us to this motion here? This is what we're discussing right now.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do know that, and I also know that you had said when we get to motions that we would be able to ask her any questions that we wanted to. So I don't know when to jump in. If you'd like me to stop, I will stop. If you'd like me to continue, I have just a couple more minutes. If I can, I talk pretty fast. And I try to make my point faster.
Whatever you would like
me to do, Mr. Chairman.
I think that the issue that we're trying to resolve here today has to do with deep-sea corals. It's not the habitat amendment in general.
Yes, I heard that very loud and clear. I've also heard her to restrict fishing, and I've been hearing that for years, to restrict fishing. And if you prove to me a point where we would restrict fishing that would be better for all of us, including the fishing industry, I would support it. And I'd go back and tell my senator we should support this. Right now, I don't know what to tell the senator on this. So I still need to speak. If you want me to stop, I will stop. You've been very good to us and whatever you say.
I ask you to make it as quickly as you can.
I will try to do it as quickly as possible. We also know that we have filled in marshlands and other critical habitat along the coast, which destroyed estuaries for juvenile fish. But I have to come back to you and say that after 400 years of fishing these areas up and down the coast, 400 years, how come the fishermen can come back to the same exact area and catch the same fish? They don't go to different areas. This is where the fish are. This is where this habitat is. They come back, and that's where they come after 400 years. One more point, and I will get out of your way. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to bearing with me. But I also know that if we clear-cut a forest or burn it, 10 years as it grows back, the animals and the birds do not habitat, grow back, come back to that area. They do not, but yet fish do. After 400 years of fishing, they do come back. So I don't know what the justification is to stopping either red crab or ground fishermen. And I read your exceptions there, but I worry about where we're going without better proof of that it hurts the fishing industry. Especially you take scallopers and they always talk about these dredges and stuff, you know, that would destroy habitat. I'm going to quit now. I've made my point. If she can answer, fine. And I thank you again. I apologize, but this is what I heard that you would allow at the time. Thank you.
Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One message you could bring, Vito, is that we only have authority to protect fish habitat and coral. We have no authority to protect it from water, from pollution, for anything. We don't have that authority. So that's one thing to keep in mind. We have no authority to protect it from pollution, and we'd like it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Anyone? Back to the council. Further discussion? Mary Beth.
Just a question here. This motion now, the perfected motion, would be that basically we continue on doing what we have been doing in the current omnibus amendment, and that we would confine our actions to the New England Council management boundary, with the exception of the Alvin Canyon. That's correct? That's what we're doing, right?
Dave Preble.
Yeah, to be perfectly correct, that isn't right. This was specifically for the boundary of the canyon zone. This did not apply to the broad area zone. That's the subject of the next amendment. I mean, the next motion. So that's the confusion here. I mean, it can be any way you want it.
Terry Stockwell, then Mary Beth.
I'm even more confused than I was about 20 minutes ago. I am a member of the Habitat Committee, but I missed that afternoon discussion, and I felt very uncomfortable with the original motion for to initiate another amendment. I was comfortable with the thought of the perfected motion on the lines that Mary Beth was advocating or was outlining, but now I'm thoroughly confused. I don't know what we're voting for. I think the whole thing ought to go back to the committee and come back to us again in June. We can have some clarity. We're at the end of a fairly long 2.5 days, and I'm not going to vote for things I don't understand.
Mary Beth.
I think that I would agree with Terry Stockwell on this. I thought I knew what we were voting for, and now it's explained as something else. And I think the best, I did come to one of the committee meetings in which some of these concerns were raised, and I think it should go back to the committee.
Dave Preble.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The confusion here is that in the broad areas, we're trying to work with the Mid-Atlantic Council, not on who has the legal authority, but on keeping management actions the same between the New England and the Mid. That's what I'm talking about here. As far as jurisdiction is concerned, that is correct. So if that's what Mary Beth was talking about, then yes, she is correct. The jurisdiction would remain the same along the line as Michelle put up. What we're trying to do is to enable us to have a process whereby as the next motion would refer to, a memorandum of understanding, which the Mid-Atlantic Council has already initiated this action. They've already approved the next motion that I would be making. And that's simply a memorandum of understanding so that we can work together on the broad areas. That's the only difference here. I don't see it as a jurisdictional issue. It's a cooperative issue.
Dave Gatham.
I think if people read the meeting summary, document 1A, pages 11, actually really it's page 10 is the map, but 11 through the top of page 13, they'll see both what the issue is and what the solution is. It's the committee spent a lot of time on this. I really don't want to go back to committee and do it again. It's an awkward situation. It's about drawing boundaries way out in the middle of the ocean and dividing up authority. And it's also about how to deal with an area that overlaps both jurisdictions. And if you vote this up and then you look at the next motion, which is a memorandum of understanding to manage the area outside the continental slope, that's as clean as we're ever going to get this. It's never going to be, a nice, neat thing. The Mid-Atlantic's already voted on how they want to do it. So if you don't vote to do something, I don't really know what happens at this point. I guess you got to ask Gene. We're going to be in really a very awkward place.
No. Okay. No comment. Mary Beth.
Well, I mean, I saw the press release from the Mid-Atlantic Council, but I don't see any correspondence to the New England Council informing us of that or telling us exactly what they did or did not do at their meeting. And now we're responding to something they did without that information in front of us, so that makes me a little uncomfortable. If this motion is to continue doing what we're doing, except to stay within our own boundaries, because now the Mid has expressed an interest in managing their own area, except for the Alvin Canyon, I'm comfortable. If it's a lot more complicated than that, I'm just not sure that this is what we should be doing today. We need to have exactly what the Mid plan is in writing from them before we react to that. I think to do so before then is not the right process here.
Anyone else? Doug.
I am perfectly comfortable with this. I don't think this is a complicated issue. I think it's as straightforward as Mary Beth has been talking about. I think we have two motions, and it's just a matter of moving forward as we are, except we're just going to – the discrete areas are going to be given south of Alvin Canyon are going to be given to the Atlantic Council because that's in their jurisdiction. I think the next motion just talks about having an MOA. I think people are making this a lot more complicated than it is, from my particular opinion. George.
And I agree with that. I was at the Mid-Atlantic Council and heard this discussion, too, and I think they're just trying to get an understanding of who's going to do what and a document that's going to make sure that you're all on the same page. I think that's all this is about.
You can. That's not debatable, but we will vote on whether to vote on the question. Okay. All those in favor of moving the question, so indicate. I think it's 15. Opposed? Abstention? 15-0-0. Okay, we're on to the motion. All those in favor, so indicate. I got to do it again, sorry. Yeah, 10 in favor. Opposed? 1 opposed. Abstention? 3 abstentions. So 10-1-3. The motion carries. Dave. What's that? Do you want to change it so that it should be 11-0-3? We're easy. Dave.
Okay. The next motion is, again, identical to the motion that was passed by the Mid-Atlantic Council with just placing the name of the Mid in place of the New England Council, and that is to initiate the development of a memorandum of understanding with the Mid-Atlantic and South Atlantic Fishery Management Councils to coordinate broad-scale deep-sea coral management measures. In other words, what this does is it memorializes the initiative of the New England Council that the committee took a great deal of time on in developing an option to establish not restrictions on the fishing industry, but an experimental fishery, or an exploratory, rather, fishery in the deep water beyond the boundaries that we set, which will go out to the EEZ, an area that has very little action right now, but we would like to allow industry the option of exploring the area without running afoul of coral restrictions. And that's what it's all about. And we're trying to work together with the Mid and with the South Atlantic Council so that we have the same management in the distant water areas. That's what this is all about.
Is there a second? Dave Gaethel. Discussion. Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this motion. I think it's very important when we're dealing with broad-scale areas and setting what the depth limits are and the specific management measures that we have similar management measures between the three councils. And I hope the rest of the council will also support this motion.
Anyone else on the council? Paul Howard and Terry Stockwell.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at page 10 of that document, which shows this broad shaded area on each side, the Mid-Atlantic side and the other side. And to my knowledge, we know where there is succinct coral areas, but we don't know if there's any coral out there. So what we're saying is we're going to manage fishing in that gray area under the coral protection measures? Or once we identify that there's coral, will. I don't understand the shaded area and why we have to have measures for the shaded area where we don't know there's any coral.
The intent is to initiate or to allow an exploratory fishery in a deep water area where we suspect that there are corals. And the PDT and the we had a two-day coral conference in Woods Hole recommended doing this, and they recommended going to the edge of the EEZ. I believe Michelle can correct me on this one. I think they also had an option for 2,000 meters, something on that order, or 1,500 meters. And so that there was a great deal of attention with the scientific community towards that area. We're not really managing fisheries because there's no fisheries out there now anyway. What we're doing is trying to allow an option for anybody who wants to go out and explore the area for fisheries, because there is now, this is happening up in the NAFO regulatory area where people are actually designing methods of trawling to extremely deep depths and are exploring that area up there with just this paradigm. So it was just simply a method of allowing for the agency to permit people to go out there under a set of whatever restrictions is appropriate, whether it's observers or there's a list of them in Michelle's presentation of the potential restrictions that could be placed on that. But the idea is that that if industry wants to go out there, it's an unknown area like the Arctic Ocean, and we don't know what's out there. And the scientists simply did not want people going out there without having some means of determining what they're finding and what hazards may exist to the habitat.
Mary Beth.
I become less comfortable with every moment. This is a huge area. To say that we're going to enter into memorandums of understanding with two other councils to manage this broad-scale area for deep-sea coral in the way that Dave just described sounds as if we're saying that we think that's the correct approach, and that we're going to somehow negotiate with other councils on exactly what those details are. And quite frankly, I have not seen this council even endorse this approach at all. So to pass a motion that says we're going to start working with other councils on an approach that we haven't yet endorsed is just, we should not be doing this at this point. I'm not at all comfortable with that.
Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the motion and with some hesitation in that the concern of getting something done to protect deep-sea corals might be delayed by virtue of having to coordinate with other councils. But I think it does make sense to do that in a more coordinated fashion and to build on what this council has done several years ago through the Monkfish Amendment in protecting a handful of canyons that are in this council's jurisdiction, but that obviously with the overlap with the Mid-Atlantic and the Monkfish fishery, there's a need to coordinate this, this kind of activity. So I support this. I think it makes sense to be considering these places on a holistic basis, and my hope is that if we get this thing going, that even if the Essential Fish Habitat Omnibus Amendment continues to stall, that we will be able to use the relatively new provisions in the Magnuson Act to protect deep water corals and work in conjunction with the other two councils on the East Coast.
Anyone else on the council? Oh, Terry.
Well, I share Mary Beth's concerns. I am supportive of the development of, or at least the intended development of consistent measures across the three councils. What my question is who's taking the lead? What's our staff workload going to be? And what are the next steps? I mean, it could be a very big job.
Dave?
Actually, the job is virtually done. We did it at the committee, and on page 20, there's a list of possible standards that can be adapted, and these would be part of the what the committee and the will be doing, or and the PDT will be doing over the next couple of months, deciding what these are, or they may all be moved forward as potential parts of this. It's not really. It isn't the question of trying to manage.
Page 14.
No, I'm looking here.
I'm looking at the minutes from the meeting.
Oh, no, I'm looking at page 20 of Michelle's presentation. What we're trying to do is to exempt people from having tight management in the distant water. That's what this is all about, and get the kind of data that we can't get any other way. There's very little known about what's on the bottom out there. If somebody wants to go out and explore it, they should be allowed to do so. That's what this is for.
Mary Beth.
Has anyone contacted the South Atlantic Council to see if they have any interest in this? I mean, we say, oh, well, it's very, very simple, but I think Terry raised some significant concerns. What are the resources needed? This is not part of our current list of priorities. There's a number of things that come up. This just out of the, I think this needs to be fleshed out and come back. I just don't see where we're ready for. It's very difficult at this point to really sort of figure out what all the implications of a motion like this might be. And I'm not comfortable. I'm not at all comfortable with this.
Just one quick comment. I mean, continuing with the omnibus amendment is one of our priorities. And we weren't aware that when we started on in this section of it, that the MID was going to request that they control their own area. So, that's happening.
Right, and thank you for that, because if that's exactly what all we were doing today, we say, well, we understand the Mid-Atlantic wants to do their own thing, so let's continue to do our thing. I don't have any problem with that. But we're now stepping out, talking about doing things quite differently, and I'm not comfortable with that.
I have George Darcy, then Dave Gaethel.
This is only a motion to initiate development. It doesn't commit anybody to anything at this point. And I think the memorandum of understanding the MID was talking about, and it was a very general discussion, wasn't to propose any particular kind of measures. It was only to come to an agreement as to how the councils would coordinate together. It was a process-oriented memorandum, was my understanding.
Dave, Gaethel.
Yeah, I'm going to try and alleviate Mary Beth's fears. The committee passed three motions, starting with different boundaries, 200, 300, and 400 meters, out to the 200-mile limit, for an area that it is inferred that coral exists in, that no fishing currently goes on in now. And in order to have continuity across what will now be two management zones, you need to have this motion so that we can work through a memorandum of understanding with the Mid-Atlantic to have hopefully similar or the same management regimes across that boundary in that gray area. And the goal of this is to come up with basically a way to manage an area that fishing may occur in the future, and to do it in a way that is different than how we've done it in the past, which is, if you're going to create a fishery out there, that we come up with a list of requirements for creating that fishery so that we get information on the area, for example, where the coral is, since we don't now currently know, and what you're fishing for, and come up with a way that the fishery is developed both sustainably and in conjunction with the habitat concerns in the continental slope area. This is basically trying to project forward a way of doing business in the future that we don't repeat mistakes of the past and work with the MID in doing so. And in order to do that, you have to initiate this memorandum of understanding, which is described, as I said, between pages 11 and 14 of the April 6th meeting summary. I would urge you to pass the motion, and let's get on with developing this and get it done.
Erling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is my understanding that the South Atlantic Council is also working on these coral issues. I don't know what stage they're at, if they're similar to what you're doing up here or where we are in the Mid-Atlantic, but from my understanding, they're also progressing on this.
Dave?
Actually, it's not important that we have an MOU with the South Atlantic Council. That could actually be taken out of this motion, but the idea with the MID, the people that came up from the MID, was that it should be consilient across all three areas. That's why I left it in. This is the motion that was passed by the MID right here. You're looking at it. except that they had New England, but we have Mid-Atlantic on this.
Michelle.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a couple comments. To Erling's question, the South Atlantic is very far along with the development of coral-related management measures. They have a number of different coral HAPCs where they do kind of broad restrictions on fishing and then access areas within them. And as Dave mentioned, I don't know that the need for coordination with them is as important because there's kind of along the whole slope, there's a discontinuity between their broadest, largest zone and the southern extent of where any Mid-Atlantic New England zone would be. Just the other comment that I wanted to make is that because of the way that fisheries are distributed in the region on either side of the New England Mid-Atlantic Council boundary, whether the council today wants to initiate something formally on paper as a memorandum of understanding or not, we've gotten very clear guidance from the regional office that we're going to need to continue to consult with the Mid-Atlantic and work back and forth with them on, explaining what we're doing and analyzing any impacts that this action would have on their fisheries.
Go to the audience, Gibb.
Thank you. Real quickly, Gibb Brogan with Oceana. Following up on what Michelle said, this work's been going on for a number of years between the councils, and it's been going on through a series of gentlemen's agreements between the chairs and between the current chairman and his predecessor and the chairman in the Mid-Atlantic. And I think the difference that this motion makes is it puts it on paper so that everybody at the table understands what the ground rules are, what was agreed to between the chairs of the different councils and the agency, and everybody has a say in what's going on. Otherwise, it's going to go on with behind closed doors and the gentlemen's agreements, and that has been confusing to everybody in the process. So let's get it on paper, clear it up, and then we'll all know what rules we're playing with. As far as one other thing on the use of the broad deep-sea coral areas, the one thing that was left out of the discussion is that's the strategy of the agency. That's not just something that was thought up in this region. It was published by the agency, I believe, in 2010. The Habitat Committee got a presentation on the use of this from the Deep Sea Coral Program from Silver Spring, that this is the established strategy, the national strategy, to use this precautionary management approach in areas that are unfished. So it's not a one-off here. This is the accepted strategy from the agency. So including that in the range of the alternatives is right on the money. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Back to the council. Call a question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Thirteen opposed. One. Abstention. One. 13-1-1. Motion carries.
Okay, now we get into the easy ones. These are the committee motions. We have We have two motions to deal with the broad zones, and we have a series of them to deal with the discrete zones. So the first broad zone motion, on behalf of the committee, to analyze three options for the broad areas. These begin at 300 meters, 400 meters, and 500 meters, with the options based on contours rather than straight lines. And they extend to the edge of the EEZ.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion. We'll go to the audience. Gib.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the subject with Gib Brogan Oceana, with the use of the broad-scale approach, part of the strategy is to establish the line between fished and unfished areas. As it stands right now, there isn't any analysis to support the 300-meter, 400-meter, and 500-meter as the current extent of the fishery. The SASE model actually spits out a number, a hard number that's supported by analysis from VTR data and other sources, and that empirical approach has been left out of the current range of alternatives. We'd like to see something inserted in here, maybe not a specific number at this point, but an alternative to be developed based on analysis of what the current extent of the fishery is through a date certain, say through the end of 2010, that this is the current footprint of the fishery and this is the demarcation line between fished and unfished areas. Otherwise, the alternatives that are in here are arbitrary. They were ballpark sort of back of the envelope math at the committee level, but it's not supported by any hard science, and I think National Standard 2 requires more than that. So we'd support a more empirical approach to this. And just a side note on that, that was discussed at the Mid-Atlantic Council and will likely be in their range of alternatives for the broad scale. That had some support at the Mid-Atlantic Council to take that hard look at the data that's in there. So we'd encourage the Council to include an option for the PDT to develop that empirical approach. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the Council. Dave?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I meant to mention this motion passed the committee 6-0-1, with the one being the agency abstention. Also, what Gibb is calling for is going to be part of the analysis of this once it's approved by this by the council. That's an intelligent way to go, and that's the way it's been done in the past, and that will be part of the analysis.
Anyone else on the council? Call the question. All those in favor? Twelve. Opposed? Abstention? 12-0-1. Dave.
Okay, the next one is a committee motion to analyze four options. Prohibit the use of bottom tending gear, prohibit the use of mobile bottom tending gear, presuming prohibition options to allow exploratory fishing in broad areas, also four to allow restrictions and prohibitions to be implemented via framework. This passed the committee 6-0 with the one abstention. And there are basically three options on management actions in order to get a range of alternatives.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion. Go to the audience. Gibbs taking a pass. Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? 12. Opposed? Abstention? 1. 12-0-1. Dave.
Okay, the next one is a committee motion. Motion number three on my list. We are getting into the discrete zone options right now, and this one passed the committee 6-0 with the one abstention, and is to analyze the following options for discrete deep sea coral zones. One, PDT recommended C1, C2 canyons and slope areas, coral data based and suitable habitat inferred. Two, PDT recommended C2 canyons, suitable habitat inferred. 3, seamounts identified by PDT as discrete zones. 4, 2 Gulf of Maine discrete areas recommended by PDT as discrete zones. Intent is that options could be selected individually or in combination. Boundaries of these areas will be developed based upon criteria provided in a subsequent motion.
Committee motion. No second. Discussion. Glenn.
Just a question. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The Gulf of Maine areas, are those areas that look like there could be coral, or did we find coral there?
Michelle can give you that.
Yeah.
And that's addressed in subsequent motions, by the way.
Yeah. I guess to answer that, corals have been documented visually in both of the different, in Western Jordan Basin and near Mount Desert Rock. And also, just looking forward to the other motions that are going to be brought up, I think key element of this motion is that the intention that the different zones could be combined or selected individually. So this could be simpler, perhaps, than it is.
Glenn, are you okay with that? Anyone else? Dave Gaethel.
I just wanted, for Glenn's edification, there is a chart in the presentation so you can see they're discrete zones. It's Michelle's slide 19 shows you Mount Desert Rock and the Western Jordan Basin zones.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor of the motion, so indicate. Opposed. Abstention. 1. 1301. Dave.
Okay. The next one is it's my number 4. It's that the area under consideration for Mount Desert Rock be the smaller federal waters area to the west only, and that one passed 501, and 501.
Committee motion, no second. Discussion. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, the rationale here, I think it's important to note, is that one zone included Maine state waters, and we don't, it was the committee's view that if people wanted to do something in Maine state waters, that was between them and the state of Maine, and the committee had no say over it.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know in habitat, we can identify habitat in state waters. We just can't take any measures to protect it. But there is benefit to identifying the habitat even in state waters. I was wondering if there was any discussion of just the benefit of identifying it in state waters. Can't take action, but you can identify it.
Well, we have identified it. It's drawn on, you know, in some of the committee discussion documents, but again, we felt pretty strongly that we ought to, you know, we've done what we could do, and if somebody else wants to do more with it, that's their business.
Anyone else in the council? To the audience? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? 13, opposed, abstention, 1302, carries. Dave.
Okay, the next one. For the Western Jordan Basin area, limit consideration to the 4 discrete boxed I should say areas, hatched on chart. And that one passed 501, with the abstention being the agency.
Committee motion. No second. Any discussion? The council. To the audience. Back to the council. Call a question. All those in favor? Thirteen. Opposed? Abstention? 13-02. Motion carries.
Sorry. Okay, for the that the council accepts for further analysis coordinates developed for the discrete seamount, canyon, and slope zones, and that one passed 6-0-0.
Committee motion. No second required. Discussion. Go to the audience. Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? 13. Opposed? Abstention? 2. 13-02. Committee motion, no second required. Discussion. Audience. Back to the council. Call a question. All those in favor? 13. Opposed? Abstention. 13-02.
Sorry. Three more motions applying to both broad and discrete areas. The first one is under coral zone restriction option A, bottom tending gears, formally adopt sub-option A1, exempt the red crab fishery from coral zone restrictions. And that one passed 411.
Committee motion. No second required. Discussion. David.
Just a little rationale as to why they would be exempted. Their gear is not on the bottom. It's red crab. I assume it's on the bottom. So why the exemption?
The David can address this as well. As I recall the discussion, it was felt that the most likely gear to be restricted in any way whatsoever would be the mobile gear anyway. And they were already fishing out there, so it's just a grandfather clause, basically.
Paul Howard.
Dave, why are we formally adopting and not taking out or allowing one option to have an in and one option to eliminate it? I don't understand formally adopt. Aren't we just approving an option that allows it to... I don't understand why we need this.
I'm not sure of your question. If you're asking about the exploratory fishery, this wouldn't be an exploratory fishery. This is an established fishery. So the committee decided to handle it differently.
Can I make a comment?
Anyone else? Tom?
Just to follow up on Paul's question, if I heard you right, it's unclear to me as well what we're actually doing. We're formally adopting this as an to be developed as an alternative that we would continue to consider, not formally adopted as our preferred or the final.
Michelle.
The formally adopt, just the way the discussion was going, the committee had previously had discussion about the red crab fishery in particular and potential exemptions and different things like that, and there was some discussion around the table, are we going to just include that as an option? And somebody said, I think we should make a motion formally to put that in the document as an option. So that's where that language came from. It wasn't any relation to going beyond just evaluating this as an alternative at this time.
Everybody happy with that explanation? Okay. Go to the, I can't remember now, have I been to the audience on this one? Back to the council. Call a question. All those in favor? Opposed. 1. Abstention. 1. 13-1-1. Dave.
Okay, getting down to the end here. The next one is, under the list of possible exemptions to fishing prohibitions, that the PDT provide a list of requirements for an exploratory fishing fishing permit. And that was that one passed 5-0-1.
Committee motion. No second required. Discussion. Paul Howard.
Well, we have an experimental fishery process. Why would we want to create an exploratory fishery process?
Go ahead.
Dave Gaethel.
Well, an experimental fisheries permit presupposes that we know something about the fishery already. An exploratory fishery, because there's no fishery here now, is going to have to gather more information, so it would probably have more elements to it. For example, encounters with coral. Anyway, it was to have the PDT develop a list of what would be necessary for somebody to go out into this zone and do exploratory fishing. It might have, I could think of a lot of things that aren't in an experimental fishing permit that could be in this. I could start rattling off a list if you want, but it probably wouldn't be inclusive.
Dave Preble.
Yes, David is quite correct. The an experimental fishery, you're looking at more of the goal is restriction, and with this one, it's more gearing it toward exploratory action that would where we're trying to restrict the restriction, I guess is the way to put it.
Anyone else in the council? To the audience. Back to the council. Call a question. All those in favor? 12. Opposed. Abstention. 12-0-2. Dave.
Okay, the last committee motion was that options A and B under the list of frameworkable provisions be included in the document.
Committee motion. No second. Discussion. Go to the audience. Michelle?
I was just going to add that option A is to change the fishing restrictions in a coral zone, and option B is to change any of the exemption provisions.
You understood that, didn't you?
No. Audience? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? 13. Opposed. Abstention. 1301.
Okay, last motion. That the council approves the above range. This is not a committee motion. That the council approves the above range of alternatives for analysis in the omnibus deep sea coral amendment.
Motion needs.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that we wrote that. We wrote that when we were trying to split it off. And the omnibus habitat amendment.
There needs to be a second to the motion. Terry Stockwell. Discussion. Go to the audience. Back to the council. All those in favor? Contrary-minded and abstentions. 0-0.
Okay, that's all I have. The only thing I would like to say is that I'd like to thank the council. This is we're moving off the reservation here into new territory and trying to protect the habitat and protect the industry as well. So thank you all.
Thank you, and thank you for the staff work. I will ask the council push on through, and people will take breaks when they need them. That I'm sort of seeing most heads going this way. Okay. Now, we will jump into David Pierce's favorite subject.